morning, Honorable Members. And our guests, my apologies. I left my second life in my on my set at the plane, then I had to quickly go back because there's nothing I can do without my other pair of eyes. So my apologies for I hope it has been, it was tendered. Okay. We are, as we agreed in the last committee, and in advance I want to thank members for availing themselves. This week is a committee week, but because I then communicating with the staff that I think let us just spread the presentation so that we don't do everything at one day. I always believe in ensuring that we then become mentally exhausted as we are trying to learn the work, the nuts and the bolts of this department. But this week we are then now on our fourth quarterly presentation. And I think our memory is still fresh to be able, as the department will be going through, we're then going to be able to see what was, to be able to understand and remember what then was said in the last quarter, in the third quarter, and what they are then saying in this quarter. I find it quite a challenging exercise that we are going to go through, but it's an exercise that is necessary. Just to remind members that we are still finishing up the work of the fifth administration. So some of the issues that we had expectations from the department, we may not then be able to be exposed to them now. It's only when they then come back for their annual report. When then we will then get it. I think it's important that I say that upfront. I'm not implying that then members would not then ask questions if they do want to ask those questions. Can I just, if allowed, just amend the agenda a little bit? Take the consideration of the draft minutes to be the last part, if members are fine with that, without any consultation with the whip, my apology. So instead of starting with the minutes, we'll then deal with the minutes when we are alone. We'll then allow the department to take us through. Having said that, we have a couple of apologies. We've got an apology from the DG, who is attending a G7 summit in Japan with the ministry. We are also having an apology from the deputy minister, who's attending a G20 employment working group, which is also in Japan. And we are having a, but I saw him coming, I don't know whether. Oh, sorry. We also have an apology from the minister, who is in the NCOP, am I correct? within the NCOP. And the committee meeting in the NCOP is a and you will also be in the Global Lift and Escalating Exhibition event in Johannesburg. We have got an apology for a member of committee, Mr. Ngwezi, from the IFPA. I think he is in another committee, which that committee is conducting an oversight in Johannesburg. Those are our apologies for today. Without wasting any time, we don't know who has been then delegated by the Office of the DG to make a presentation. So I'll hand over to you, to whoever.
I am whoever. Honourable Chair. My name is Agimuyiwa. I'm the acting DG. By designation, the department, I'm the deputy DG for inspection and enforcement services. I'm going to keep the presentation, Chair, if you allow, very as high level as possible, because most of the granular detail was presented last week. I'm going to be co-presenting with the DDG Public Employment Services, Mr. Mbotoga, who's going to look into the sheltered supported employment enterprise presentation. And then Mr. Begima Duna, the CFO, is going to be looking into the finances of the department. That said, I'm going to start at slide 17, which then focuses on the focus of the just in terms of the strategic objectives that we set ourselves, it is as reflected, but the overall performance for the fourth quarter was 72%. And we move on to the next slide. It then breaks down the 72% in terms of the branches. And you'll see that the branches came to the party. There was a drop in performance with regards to inspection and enforcement services from 100% to 50%. The two indicators that were not achieved talk to the number of inspections as well as the referrals that were made for prosecution. The reasons for failure to achieve, although it's marginal, I need to point that out, Chairperson, that in terms of the number of inspections, the performance was at 94%. So anything that is less than 100% is not achieved. And then with regards to the referral for prosecution, the achievement was at 55% instead of 60%. I'll provide the reasons when we get to the slide that talks through the breakdown. To continue, we can go to slide number 20. That slide is kind of giving a... It is giving a synopsis in terms of the comparative analysis of what the performance has been of the department throughout the quarter from quarter one. And we'll go to the next slide. It is providing a comparison between the core business of the department, inspection enforcement services, as well as public employment services, broken down in terms of provinces and how the performance has been. You will recall that in even the third quarter, the non-players were in Northern Cape, and you can see that Northern Cape is also featuring with regards to IEF in particular. And then KZN is also one province that didn't come to the party. At the time of this performance, the Durban Labour Centre was closed due to non-compliance with occupational health and safety. That had an impact with regards to their targets, Durban Labour Centre being the biggest. So the adjustment of having to work without an office had an impact. But as a point of normal practice, where there are areas of non-compliance, we then have action plans that are closely monitored so that there's improvement, and so to see that in the next quarter they were able to pick up their performance. Northern Cape is inundated with, you recall that the DG did indicate that there were some ER issues with regards to the head of the province. But beyond that, this is one province where there's a high turnover of inspectors. Inspectors come and go. So they always pick up a higher vacancy rate, and whoever comes in is new. And there's a time of catching up, so it sort of also affects their performance. The next slide is comparing quarter three and quarter four with regards to public employment services. And you'll see that pretty much the performance has been maintained, and except that Northern Cape dropped from 100% to 75%. And when you look at the slide that follows, it's showing a comparative performance between quarter three and quarter four of IES. I've already spoken to this, so I'm just going to go through to the next slide. I'm on slide 26. This slide is talking about issues around surplus and wasteful expenditure for the quarter. There was an amount of about $2.9 million reported. In terms of irregular expenditure, it was $1.5 million, just over $1.5 million. We didn't have any unauthorized expenditure for the period. Then slide 28 is talking to issues around communications. When I look at the marketing and advertising, the department was able to cover 100% the ministerial and DG programs. I think that slide is just giving detail in terms of some of the initiatives that were undertaken by the different offices. And also the fact that there were newsletters that were produced for the quarter, one per month. The next slide, I think it's just emphasizing the issue around the fact that we're able to cover 100% of the events of the ministry, particularly the National Minimum Wage. We'll know that at that point, the National Minimum Wage had just been, was on the verge of being promulgated. And so there was a very widespread initiative to just build a hype around them using various media. If you go to slide number 30, it continues with marketing and advertising. Chair, I won't get into too much detail with regards to the activities that were undertaken during this time. And then if you go to slide number 31, and slide number 32, they're talking about media production activities. So issues around making sure that wherever we market the department, their brochures, their booklets, their flyers, newsletters, campaigns, and so on. Slide 32 is a continuation of media production and activities. And then you look at slide 33. This is the media production electronic regarding the website, which gets updated on a regular basis. The number of topics were 132, and the topics were as indicated. The intranet was also updated, and also we've reflected on the usage of social media, because we do have a social presence and we utilize social media as well. So those are the numbers for the quarter. With regards to stakeholder relations, this is where we leverage on our stakeholders with regards to marketing and popularizing the services of the department. We had a national minimum wage seminar that focused on the Chinese employers. We had the branding of the Library Week. We also used the Easter Red Show to market our services. We had a taking service delivery to the people in the Western Cape and the Free State. In terms of, I'm going to skip that slide. I think I just want to go to slide number 37. Just to pull out on issues that were specifically covered, where we had an advocacy session on employment equity, and then the RLAC conference that was held in Balito, it was extensively covered, and the construction Indaba held in Devon, the ILOs launched by the president on the future of work report, that was also covered, and the publicizing of the logistics construction company, the structural collapse inquiry in Devon, and the publicizing of the inspection and enforcement services, a strategic workshop. Some of the workshops are internal in nature. So that slide, what it is really showing is everything that we've done, both internally and externally, as well as some of the workshops, the way we train our staff, like the Driven Machinery Regulations workshop. And then I'm going to go to slide number 39. Slide number 39 is showing the ministerial and DG programs for the quarter and what was covered. And if you go to slide 40, slide 40 is talking to both slide 40 and 41 as media statements that were issued by the department. I'm not going to go into details there. Slide 41 covers that as well, and slide 42. So those are the topics that media statements that the department had made. We go to slide 43. These are the interviews that the department had an opportunity to feature on. Various radio stations, various print media, as well as the TV. I think both slides 43 and 44 are talking to that. Then we go to slide 46. Slide 36 is talking to the performance in terms of inspection and enforcement services. The target that we set ourselves was about to conduct about 66,000 inspections for the quarter. We're able to conduct 61,000. You'll see that a lot of the provinces underperformed. And Chairperson, like I indicated earlier on, that I'll provide reasons when I come to this. You know, in some instances, we are our own worst enemies. But when it comes to the quarter four, there are a lot of activities that go on. And the issues of leave, issues of performance agreements, and so on. So you find that sometimes the way we plan things, it's really, it doesn't assist us. But what we've done in terms of corrective action is that going forward, the planning is much more meticulous to make sure that we achieve our targets. And beyond that, we've also introduced incremental reporting. So you notice that when we go to the annual report, although we didn't achieve the targets for quarter four, for the annual we're able to achieve all our targets. With regards to slide 47, that slide is talking to companies that have subjected to the Director General review. This is talking to employment equity. the Director General review is to test substantive compliance with employment equity. So the target was having 700 companies subjected to that, and we're able to do 680. Of that 680, we found that 339 failed to comply. So the non-compliance level is quite high here. And then areas of non-compliance, you can see the sections there, but then the sections are explained on slide number 49. So it is a breakdown in terms of what is it that was an issue with regards to non-compliance with the DG review. And then slide 50 is interventions with regards to dealing with non-compliance. The one thing that we do is to ensure that there's monitoring of the employers so that they comply with the DG recommendations. Because after conducting a DG review inspection, we will find elements of non-compliance. We serve companies with DG recommendations. So we really follow this through quite carefully. We serve confirmatory letters to employers who fail to comply. What this means is that when the time of compliance expires and there's still non-compliance, the law allows us to serve confirmatory notices instead of conducting follow-up inspections. Areas where we conduct follow-up inspections in the main is with regards to occupational health and safety. But with DCEA, with employment equity, we can serve confirmatory notices. We also directed extra resources during this period in terms of employment equity. We only have about 9 specializing employment equity inspectors for the entire country. So we had to capacitate the area. So we added more inspectors, about 50-60 of them. So at that time we were also training them. And as slide 51 is talking to employment equity procedural. Now what happens here in terms of procedural, we test the degree which says compliance administratively rather than substantively. So the target was for us to conduct inspections in 388 workplaces. We're able to do 384. So there's a shortfall of about 1%. Areas of non-compliance are pretty much the same. And Chair, may I also indicate that since the promulgation of the Employment Equity Law, which was promulgated in 1998, not even a single company was found to be compliant at the first instance of inspection. So that's how high the non-compliance issues are. And it really does pose a danger for our transformational agenda. As a department, the role that's supposed to play there. So among the interventions, among slide 53, that we brought forth was to conduct advocacy sessions. There are employers that are willing to comply, and they will always be willing to be more educated, and when that happens, we always are available to do that. However, the law also allows us to do direct referrals to for prosecution. For instance, if there's a violation of Section 20 of the Employment Equity Act, where a company will be working without an employment equity plan, then that's a direct referral to court. You don't even argue with them because obviously they're not taking the employment equity step if there isn't even a plan in place. So we also invoke those sections. In terms of the basic conditions of employment, this is where the highest numbers are directed. This is where we find the most vulnerable. We've got about 1,300 inspectors that deal with issues of the BCEA. We set ourselves the target of 48,000. We're able to conduct Actually, the target is at 52,000, 52.6, and we are able to do 48,000 for the reasons that I mentioned earlier. The how we conduct our inspections, we direct resources where we've got the biggest problems and challenges. And how we know is through our data. We generate data that is administrative. We look at complaints. We look at also our own interactions with a stakeholder. So there are those companies, rather sectors, that we know will be problematic. So those are the highest in terms of being problematic with regards to DCA. And the areas stipulated underneath are the areas where you find the highest non-compliance level. In slide 57 is really just indicating the initiatives that we've put in place to deal with areas of non-compliance. I think what has stood out is that we decided to do structured advocacy sessions and targeting the exact sectors that are presenting with the highest areas of non-compliance. And I must say that when it comes to DCA, the non-compliance levels are not that bad. Actually, the highest non-compliant areas will be Employment Equity Act, followed by Occupational Health and Safety, and then DCA and Employer Audit, which does registrations with UI and Compensation Fund, are not too bad. Slide 38 is showing Occupational Health and Safety inspections that we've conducted. Here we've got about 190 inspectors that specialize in the area of occupational health and safety for the entire country. So we set ourselves at a target of 6,887. We were able to do, we actually did 688 against a target of 6,857. The slide that follows, slide 59, is talking about the sectors that we reviewed per province. You'll see that the highest is in the construction sector. I need to indicate, however, Chairperson, that we started to work very, very closely with the compensation fund so that we look at the highest claimants in terms of occupational health and safety, and then we target those companies and the sectors. So our inspections are also informed by data that is collected by the compensation fund. Slide 60 is talking to incident investigation. We have set ourselves a target of 65% to finalize within 90 days. Incident investigations are very long, some of them. I can give you an example of the Grayson Bridge that collapsed in 2015 October. We only concluded that this year. So it took us about 4 years. And reason being, it becomes, once we conduct a Section 32 investigation, it becomes an issue of public interest. So we had about 9 sets of lawyers for different components. And some of the lawyers were based overseas. So to come to try and get everyone was really a mammoth task. So we sit with such challenges. Because normally what we investigate is Section 31 and 32, where there was a collapse, Tongat Mall. So actually Tongat Mall is a bit long ago, but there was a collapse of the Jacobs building in KZN. So they take a bit of time because you really run it like a quasi-court of some sort. 61 is talking to the graphical illustration of the same information, slide 61. Slide 62, just some of the challenges that we find. I want to just pull on the bullet point number 2, because the challenge really is quite key. So you find that even after we finalize our investigation, sometimes the NPA processes take forever. So you can never really say a case is finalized until the successful prosecution. But because once it leaves us as a department and gets into the NPA's hands, have got like zero effect on the matter, and they also have a backlog. And sometimes these type of cases do not receive the agency that they deserve. Needless to say also that the number of inspectors that we have here is negligible, 190 for the entire country, specializing in all your OHS. I just wanted to pull on some of those. And then slide 63 is talking to the some of the work that we do as a branch where we register practitioners that manage steam generators, lifts and escalators, electrical contractors, approved inspection authorities, divers. We also register commercial divers and first aid organizations. This function is mainly concentrated on head office, hence we see the numbers are higher in at head office, but also at a provincial level, they do get they do this function as well. We're able to achieve that target of registering 80% within 60 days. The slide that follows is a graphical illustration. Then we go to the next. The next two slides, 65 and 66, are talking to our function with regard to auditors that look at the payroll audits and activities around unemployment insurance. In terms of declaration, we know the law requires that employers must declare on a monthly basis who's on their payroll, deductions that are made, and so on. Those two slides are just indicating the activities that were undertaken in this regard. We're able to achieve our target here. Then if we go to slide 67, it's talking to areas of non-compliance with regards to unemployment insurance. And then slide 68, our intervention. Slide 69, Chair, I want to apologize up front that this slide has been updated. We just missed to put in the most updated one, but you can make that available. So the most updated slide will show that in terms of financial recoveries, we're sitting at over 9 million. And it's broken down in terms of various recoveries. Some of them are due to non-compliant employers with regards to employment equity. With around BCA recoveries that we make, and those recoveries are paid back to the actual beneficiaries. And instances where there's under declaration with regards to unemployment insurance and the compensation fund. So there is an updated version of that slide. And then I'll get into public employment services. To go to slide number 71. That slide is showing the target in terms of worker registration and the actual. So we're able to surpass the target. Slide number 72. It's just a breakdown that shows the registered work seekers by age group. So we've got more young people registering at 63%, and those over 36 years at 37%. Slide number 73, it's work seekers registered by disability. So in terms of the numbers of disabled people that are registered, it's 0.6%. And you can see that the highest disability is in blindness. Then we've got 228 that have got physical disability, 184, and they've got chronic conditions and others. If we go to slide number 74, this is registered, registered by equity groups. So we'll see that in terms of the breakdown, Africans are the highest, 86%, followed by colors, 10%, whites, 3%, and Indians, 1%. And then we had those that were not specified, 436 of them. Statistically, that number is not as significant, it's 0%. Slide number 75, work and learning opportunities registered by economic sector. You can see the sectoral breakdown. 23% of registered work and learning opportunities were classified according to economic sectors, while the rest were not classified. Most learning opportunities were in the agricultural sector, followed by construction, and then safety and security. Slide number 76, work and learning opportunities registered by type. We had 57% opportunities registered as formal jobs, 22% projects, 12% learnership, and the rest have been split in the 8% in terms of how it is shown there. Slide 77 is opportunities and placement by sector. I'm not going to go through that, you can see. And then slide number 78 is talking to work seekers provided with employment counseling. The targets in total was 200,000. We're able to do about 241,000, surpassing the target. And then the work seekers registered in employment counseling by province. There's a graphical illustration. I need to point out that the highest numbers were in KwaZulu-Natal, and Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, and Western Cape, which is really predictable in terms of level of economy activity. And then placement by opportunity type, we were able to place 49,968 work and learning opportunities. 60% of those were formal jobs, 28% projects, and 7% learnership. Slide number 81 is placement by economic sector. I won't go into details. And then number 82 is talking to placement by age group. I mean, obviously, our highest registered workers are young people, so the placement also is reflective of those breakdowns. So you can see that the young people were the most replaced. And the next program is labor policy and industrial relations. To go to slide number 84. That slide is talking to the labor organizations, the trade unions, their applications, quarter four. You can see the breakdown there in terms of applications that were, for registration that were received. In quarter four, it was 33. Those that are approved within 90 days, it was 4. Approved longer than 90 calendar days, 0. Refused, 29. Trade unions cancelled or deregistered, 1. Slide number 85. This is the, now the breakdown per sector. And you can see that the highest sector is communication, followed by, if you go to the next slide, it says that slide is showing trade union members per sector, and you can see that the highest is industrial in that sector, followed by mining. And then we've got 2,240 in slide number 87 under wholesale, distribution, retail, and commercial, and 4,000 under estate. Slide number 88 is talking to trade union members impacted upon by refusal per sector, quarter one. Refusal, in other words, those unions that were not registered. Those are the numbers that were impacted. As you can see, the highest is on the slide is communication. Slide number 89, the industrial there, number. Slide number 90, the health aid, wholesale distribution and retail. Slide number 91, trade union members impacted upon by refusal per sector continuation. That's like a total, for the total number of members impacted on by refusal. It's 15,503 in total. Chairperson, I'll hand over to Mr. Mrothof, and then Mr. McDonough will follow with the financial report.
Before that, there's an error on my side in terms of introduction to just starting on your side for members to know who are the, should I say, new faces. I'm not quite sure whether they are here because of the comment that we made, but I think we will appreciate that, so that at least the members are, if that's fine with members. Okay. I don't know who's leading the team, whether it's you, ma'am, in terms of the them, if they are to introduce themselves per individual, they can use the mic. It should be fine.
Peggy Maduna, the Chief Financial Officer of the Department of Labor.
I'm Makosonke Buntele, responsible for communication. Chair Tepo Marubin, the UIF Commissioner. Today I brought in the Chief Operations Officer at UIF, who will do the presentation, Ms. Judith Kumi, as per the clearly said message last week.
I would have appreciated if she
All right, thanks, Chairperson. My name is Judith Kumi from Unemployment Insurance Fund.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Sam Morotova. I'm the DDG responsible for public employment services and the acting chief executive officer of supported employment enterprises.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Matapola Matapusa from the office of the DG.
Good morning. Just like last week, I'm Marsha Bronkhorst, COO for the Department of Labor.
Morning, honorable members and chairperson. I'm Bahumi Matapusa, the DG for corporate services.
Morning, honorable members. My name is Vuyo Mafata, the compensation commissioner.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members. My name is Tando, my surname is Wababa. I am from the Office of the Minister, Parliamentary Office.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. I'm George Mungmela, the Chief of Staff from the Office of the Minister.
Good morning, members. Eric Nyagamba, from both the Office of the Minister and the Deputy Minister.
All right. No, thank you very much. I think we appreciate when we have raised an alarm on our observations in terms of the representation from the department that has been listened to. For the benefit of those that were not here in the last members, we did say that it was quite a little bit disturbing that everybody that was presenting was a male. So we're trying to encourage, and we also we want the department to take a lead in terms of exposing
women, and ensuring that they are so. Thank you very much. I think we appreciate that. We'll hand over to the. Okay. And you'll pardon us. It's going to take time for us to, in particular for myself, to memorize your names. So please pardon me.
Thank you again, Honorable Chairperson. We presented the report of the SEE, and we also attempted to add additional information on some of the aspects that were raised last week. I think honorable members, those of you who went through the background, I'm not going to go into detail on that except to provide additional information. We did give you an indication of the footprint of the factories and their location, but what we have now done is to also provide you with the physical address. For instance, in KwaZulu-Natal, we have two factories, one in Durban and Pietermaritzburg, and they both specialize in wood, metal, and textile. The textile is mainly, the wood is mainly on office, home and school furniture, and the textile is on the hospital linen. In the Eastern Cape, we have two factories in East London and PE, and they concentrate mainly on the wood and textile. Whereas in the Western Cape, we have one in Daveni and one in Epping, and they concentrate mainly on the wood products, textile and textile, mainly school furniture and hospital linen. In Northern Cape, we have the Kimberley factory, which is more on wood and metal. The Free State is in the in Bloemfontein area, mainly on wood and metal. The Northwest is in Potchefstroom, and it's concentrating on metal. And in Gauteng, we've got three, one in Silverton, where the head office of the SEE is located. The second one in Rand, in Johannesburg, and the third one in Springfield. And they all concentrate on wood, metal, and textiles as well. And we have recently, in the new financial year, launched the Sishoko factory. And we will give you a report on the production as it doesn't fall in the previous financial year, although the preparatory work fell during that period. And these are the addresses and contact numbers in case members would want to visit. Now, the previous slide, you'll recall, honorable members, we gave a history around the establishment and the staff composition and so on. Now, in terms of order for performance, we use also the legend. We have two targets. We also achieved all of them. At the end of that quarter, we were at 50%. However, during the last quarter, we managed to make sure that we achieve all of them. And this is a graphical, it's just a reflection on our achievements per quarter. Quarter one and two were at zero. Quarter three, we moved to 50%, and at the end of quarter four, we managed to move to quarter four. The graphical representation of the different quarters follows on the slide number 99. On slide number 100, we had a target of employing additional 100 people, and we managed to make sure that at the end of quarter four, we had those 100 people employed at end of quarter three were at 94. And this was partly because of the business that we secured, the orders that we had to meet and deliver, and the continuous improvement in our manufacturing processes. Just to give you a sense in terms of the headcounts per factory, you'll notice that in Devon, we moved from 92 in slide 101. We retained the numbers, and partly last time I was asked to also highlight some of the challenges. Now, honorable members, the Devon factory was damaged 2 years back during the storm that hit Devon. And we are still in a queue of having that factory rebuilt. We have had a situation where people spend almost a year at home. We tried a number of things to ferry them to the Maritzburg factory, and finally we managed to work with Public Works to secure one section of the factory, which is the canteen, and the section that was not damaged that much, to repair it and to get people from home, and they are currently producing from that section. But the large part of the factory is still prohibited because of the storm. And if you recall, most of the factories in that area, including the hospital, was damaged during the heavy storm that hit Devon. And Public Works is still repairing most of those factories. The Pietermaritzburg one moved from 58 to 65, East London from 45 to 70. The Port Elizabeth, we increased the numbers from 59 to 77 by 18. The Ndabeni factory moved from 152, we increased by 10 to 172. And the Epping factory moved from it remained that is the number remained stable. The Kimberley one added 1%, whereas the Bloemfontein one was also 1%. The Potchefstroom one, we added 4 to increase the numbers to 35. And the Silverton now stands at 101, whereas the Rand moved from 82 to 106, and the Springfield remained at 90. Our target for 2019-20 is 150, and that's where in the first quarter we'll give you a sense in terms of the increase in the numbers. On the finance side, we are the target of 10% on our revenue, and we surpassed the target because we ended the fourth quarter at 16.59%. Now, the target was 61.8 million, and the actual that we ended the year was 72 million. And that was because of the deliveries that we made on the outstanding orders, and we collected the revenue. We also had a number of invoices that were lying around that we processed, and we collected revenue from various clients that owed us money. Now the question is, what do we do with the money? Because come end of the financial year, if you have money, it gets surrendered back to Treasury. Now, we have an arrangement because Treasury allows us to generate revenue with the understanding that we must invest that money. And normally, if we don't invest it, they look at our track record, and at times they will deduct that money from the allocation they give to us. So it is in our interest to make sure that we invest in that money on the projects that we agreed with Treasury. Now, the investment, apart from the allocation that we receive, is rechanneled again according to our threat plan. For this year, we are targeting 150 people, so part of the 72 million is going to cover in slide number 103, the additional 150 people that we are going to employ. The money is also going to our expansion in the Limpopo and in the Mpumalanga, including the repair of some of the factories. We have also invested massively in the machinery that we have bought that have been delivered, and the machineries that we bought complement the people with disability. We didn't want to go into high-tech machines that were going to displace them. So you work with people from the CSIR to help us in making sure that the kind of machinery we buy takes the hard work out of and the difficult and occupational health and safety aspect, but they also allow people with disability to can interact and work in those areas. And we were asked also to highlight some of the challenges, and amongst them are that our support currently is limited to key departments. The National Department of Basic Education and Training, basic education, wherever they build new schools, we are the supplier of the furniture. However, we still have challenges, Honorable Chair, person and member, in that the provincial government would still prefer to buy furniture from private organizations. And we were able to make inroads within the Western Cape, and the Department of Higher Education did impress upon these schools to utilize the environmental affairs and the correctional services products, because when we manufacture these products, be it in the correctional and environmental, we are creating employment for people in those projects, whereas the private providers are in business and their prices are nowhere near what we charge. We also face a serious problem in that in other departments, we are still expected to compete on tenders that they issue. And this is despite the fact that our prices are fixed by National Treasury. So you cannot compete with them on those tenders when your prices are fixed, and that's because of the subsidy we get. However, where there's been an understanding, we are allowed to charge 50%, and National Treasury was able to intervene on our behalf, and we have some work that is set aside for us within the various departments, I mean provincial governments of health and the National Department of Health. We also face a challenge around the shrinking market in terms of products, because beyond hospital linen and death, there's been a challenge, and the minister has taken this issue up. We will be going to cabinet in terms of the furniture that go to various ministerial and parliamentary houses, including various government departments, to try and regain that market because previously SEE had a stake in the supply of furniture in those areas. And the last slide is basically the some of the issues that were raised with the capacity that we have. We believe that we can take the existing numbers to beyond 4,000 because we have big spaces in those factories. However, it will depend on the product. And yourselves as members of parliament, apart from the oversight role that you play, we believe that by highlighting the plight of people with disabilities, lobbying also municipalities and provincial governments and national departments to procure products from these areas, you can also assist us to make sure that we broaden the base of employment of people with disabilities, especially those with mental health challenges. And we also believe that the call that the youth women are making on government to the government department to also put or have set aside, especially for youth women and people with disabilities, is a noble cause, because if we have that set aside, I'm sure as this factory will be able to make an inroad. Now, we didn't include slides on the finances, but just to say that whilst we achieved our target, we did receive a qualified opinion from the AG on both our performance and on our financials. On our performance, the issue had to do with the alignment between the strat plan and the APP, which was raised at the year end, and we tried to have that corrected, but because it was at the year end, we couldn't. On the financial side, the issues that were qualified had more to do with the method that we used to calculate the cost of the raw material, but also we had disagreements in that they wanted us to put the value on all equipment dating back to 40 years that we put individual value when we have actually put them at one rand, which is part of the standard accounting process. And we also had an issue on the free use of public works building, because they wanted us to also provide values of those buildings and rental appropriate portions, etc. Something that is being handled by public works. But we believe that the issues that they've raised coming or going forward, we will be able to address, save for property and plant equipment value. We will have to find methodology, because if you have units that date back, you can either dispose some of them, or if you continue using them, we will have to agree on a methodology. And we have appointed a person who worked in the Auditor General to assist us in the next 2 months to try and rectify some of those issues. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. We will now get from the compensation part.
And just the financial report, the department by the Chief Financial Officer.
No, sorry, sir. Okay, over to you.
Good afternoon, Chair and honorable members. The financial information for the department at quarter four is a cumulative information, which then clearly in the world means that the financial information that I'm going to present is the same information that is going to be presented in our annual report or in the financial statements as at the end of the financial year. Our appropriation is 3.2 billion. With the administration having 881 million, IES Inspection and Enforcement Services 592 million, Public Employment Services 605 million, Labour Policy and Industrial Relations 1.2 billion, which totals to 3.2. At end of the quarter four, administration utilized 91% of the budget, Inspection and Enforcement Services 93%, Public Employment Services 90%, Labour Policy and Industrial Relations 99% of the budget. So in total, our budget utilization was 94%, which means that we had an underspending of our budget of 6%. The next slide, the same information as per the economic classification. Current payments, we utilized 92%. Transfers and subsidies, 99% of the transfers to the department were done, only 1% was not done. Capital payments for capital assets, 80%. Payments for financial assets, 1.4 million. This just an accounting term for theft and losses to the department, mainly due to the vehicles that we have. So those are the accidents that we have in the department for our fleet that we utilize. The next slide amplifies the current payments, which is compensation of employees. Under compensation of employees, we utilize 90% of the budget, which means that we had an underspending of 10%. Goods and services, so we utilized 94% of our budget at the end of quarter four, which means that we had an underspending of 6%. In total, the under current payments, the budget utilization ended at 92%. The next slide deals with or amplifies the transfers and transfers and subsidies as per program. In program three, Public Employment Services, they had transfer the amount allocated to transfers and subsidies of 254 million, of which they transferred 95% of it. The details in terms of the ones that were not transferred are in the look line items. The being the last one, compensation, or we keep the UIF one at 1,000 rand, just for in case maybe UIF needs some funding. That's why we just had maybe a 1,000 rand in there. Compensation funds is the injury on duty for public servants. We transferred almost all except for the 7,000. That was on program three. On program four, LP and I, Labour Policy and Industrial Relations, almost a bigger a part of their budget are transfers and subsidies, equal to 1.3 billion. And they have transferred almost 99% of it, with only 1% that was outstanding, and I think it mainly relates to the subscription to ILO and ARLAC. It's a saving, not an underspend. These affiliations are dollar based, so I think the rand went into our favor, so we ended up paying less than we budgeted for, hence
the percent that we have on NPNIR. I think the last slide is just an extract from the financial statement that was amplified in the financial in the annual report on the financial statements on the reasons for underspending on the categories that we have. I think that concludes the financial presentation, Chair. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. We'll now go to compensation fund.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honorable members. I will try to be slow today.
Okay.
I think I'll just, we last time we presented, we gave the background of the compensation fund. So I will start my presentation on slide 6, which just shows the performance of the fund for the year, for the up to end of quarter 4 of 2018-19. The performance level was sitting at 67%, so we achieved 67% of the targets that we had set for ourselves for the financial year. So what this slide shows, it just shows how the compensation fund has performed over the last 5 years, moving from a performance of around 40%, 45% in 2014 to the 67% that we have now currently. So the slides that will follow is the slides that will then detail the individual performance, the detailed performance per each of the strategic objectives that we have in the fund. As previously said, our strategic plan comprises only of about two strategic objectives, which is to provide effective and efficient client-oriented support, which is the indicator that are related to the corporate support functions that enable us to be able to do the work that we do in the core functions. And that comprises of about three planned indicators. And the second strategic objective is the providing fast and reliable and accessible COID services. The target was to do this by 2020. And there's about six core business areas or service delivery related performance indicators in this particular strategic objective, which gives us a total of about nine performance indicators. We perhaps have, I think, the shortest strategic plan in the whole of government. So the number of targets that we've set for the first objective is three. We achieved one. Only two of them were not achieved, which gives us a performance level of about 33%. In my later slides, I'll talk about those two indicators that we have not achieved, as well as what is it that we're doing to try and address those performance deficiencies that we've reported in this report. The second objective is around reliable and accessible COID services. We had six targets that we had set for the six indicators. Five of these were achieved. Only one was not achieved. We'll also then touch on the one that was not achieved in the later slides. The same performance in the next slide is now broken down into the four programs of the compensation fund. The first program, which relates to the administration of the fund. The second program relates to the COID services, which is the insurance aspect and the pension aspect of the compensation fund. The third program is medical services, which relates to the medical aid portion of the compensation fund. And the last program is program four, which deals with rehabilitation and orthotics of the fund. In the next slide, we just show now how we've performed over the financial year from quarter one to quarter four. We'll note a go to the next slide. Slide before that, might happen. Yes. So this just shows the performance over the financial year. You'll note that we had maintained a constant 86%, because at the time we were only reporting on about seven of the indicators that were broken down into quarters. But at the end of quarter four, there's about two additional indicators that are reportable at the end of quarter four, and one of those indicators is the one that we had not achieved. So that takes us to the 67% that we have at the end of quarter four. So our quarter four performance is also the annual performance, because all our indicators are cumulative in nature. In the next slide, just shows next slide. That slide is just the cash flow in terms of what we've paid in cash for the financial year in the different programs. I will not go to the detail. We'll touch on the details when we come and present the annual report, because in the annual report then we'll be able to break down this amount even further. If we go to the next slide, we start to talk about the areas where we have not performed. The first target, which relates to the first strategic objective, is the fund's risk management maturity level. The target there was we wanted to achieve a risk maturity level of 4 by end of March 2019. We did not achieve this because the maturity level was sitting at around 3.5%. So what this means then is that there's a lot of things that we need to put in place to make sure that risk management becomes embedded in the things that we do, so that we can address a lot of the control deficiencies that I'm sure the Auditor General will be sharing with you sometime next week or so. So this is the one indicator that we haven't achieved. One of the things that we've done now, because what we've been doing, we've been assessing the risk maturity level looking at only the risk management unit. So we've actually contracted independent assurance from internal audit so that they can then do this independent review of the entire organization, not only of the risk management unit. And from the current financial year, we'll then be reporting the assessment, the maturity, looking at the whole organization, not only looking at the risk management unit. The next one, we had a target there with the surplus funds that we have as a fund. The money that we collect from employers, we use to pay for our benefits, and then the surplus we then invest as part of our investment portfolio through the Public Investment Corporation. So we then set an investment target for these investments, which is CPI plus 2, so whatever returns we get should be equivalent to CPI plus 2, and the CPI plus 2 at the end of the financial year was supposed to be 6.7%, and the investment return that we got in the last financial year was about 1.6%. So there was a deficit of about 5.1%, and this is largely due to the performance of the investments in the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, which has been impacted by the dynamics happening around the economy of the country. So one of the things that we're doing now to try and address this issue, because we are now looking at our investment strategy to try and address the weaknesses that may be there that may lead to us not being able to achieve the investment return that we have set. So when we present our 2020-2021 APPN strategic plan for the next 5 years, that we would have worked through this indicator, it may not appear in its current form, because we will now be looking at some of the things that are related to the investments that we make, as opposed to only looking at the return. Because when we look at the return, it can be misleading, because if you look at the total size of our portfolio, it has in real terms increased. It's just that the due to the performance of some of the instruments that we already had, that the investment return came out at the level that it is now. The third indicator that we have not achieved was the indicator in the core business area that relates to having about 75% of all actively registered employers assessed by the end of March 2019. By this we mean that all employers are required to register with the compensation fund, and then annually they submit what we call return of earnings. So these return of earnings are the ones that we then use to assess what is the amount of money that they need to pay us, and then they would then pay based on that assessment. So we set the target for about at least 75% compliance rate for employers to have been assessed. At the end of March 2019, only about 55% of the registered employers had been actively assessed and had submitted their return of earnings to the fund. And the biggest challenge here, as I said last week, is the issues around non-compliance by employers who do not then comply with the provisions of the Compensation for Occupational Injuries and Diseases Act in terms of submitting return of earnings and then paying on those assessments. So what we're doing, the acting DG spoke earlier on about the relationship that has been forged between the inspection and enforcement services of the department together with the fund. So what we've done, we've actually then created a specialized payroll auditors within the inspectorate division that are going to specialize on enforcing compliance to the compensation for occupational injuries and diseases. In the last financial year, we were in the process of then working with IES to make sure that we fill the posts that were created for these payroll auditors, and they should then start working in the current financial year to help in dealing with all the issues identified around non-compliance by employers. So this is one big area that we will be focusing on in this current financial year, because this the non-compliance also then has an impact on the workers, because if they are not covered when they get injured in the workplace, they're not able to enjoy access to social security. The subsequent slides just break down at a high level the main performance indicators that are relating to the core business area of the fund. One is that we have a target that 90% of claims need to be adjudicated within 40 days. So when a claim is received by the compensation fund, once an employer has registered a claim, we then need to assess the claim for the purposes of accepting liability, so that a worker can be able to then get the money that is due to him or her. So we then set a target that we need to adjudicate about 90% of these claims within 40 working days, meaning we have received all the reports, we've been able to then make a decision on the claim. So the target is about 90%, and for the quarter four, we had achieved about 94% of the claims were registered within 40 days. If you look at the numbers inside the slides, you see that we registered by end of quarter four, 156,223 claims were registered, and about 146,000 of these claims were adjudicated within 40 days. But in the current financial year itself, we were able to adjudicate almost all the claims that we received, which is about 98%. So meaning no person who registered a claim in 2018-2019 had a claim not being attended to by the fund. In the next slide, it just shows then once we've accepted liability for a claim, we then pay for the medical costs associated with the claim. If a person is undergoing treatment and so on, we then pay for that healthcare that the injured worker then has to enjoy. So now also here, the target is about 85% of all the invoices that we get need to have been finalized and paid within 60 working days of receiving the invoices. By end of quarter four, we had received about 934,742 claims or medical invoices, and about 867,381 were finalized and paid within 60 days of receipt, which takes us to about 93% of the claims paid within that performance period. But however, we were able to pay in total all invoices, about 931,000 of the 934,000 invoices that were received in the current financial year were finalized and paid in the financial year. The next slide just shows then the breakdown of the, because we also then also pay for those that are injured, we then pay for assistive devices that they need to get. If a person requires a wheelchair, orthotic or prosthetic devices that they need, we then pay for those as well, and we approve for the practitioners to dispense these devices. So the target that we have here is that when we receive this pre-authorization request, we need to finalize and approve and respond within 15 working days of receiving the request. By the end of quarter four, we had received 1,159 of these requests, and about 1,057 of them, which is 91% of these, were then approved and finalized within the 15 working days of receipt. The other indicator relates to pre-authorizations where a worker is injured and requires additional medical treatment, where the practitioner would then be requiring to do additional procedures on the injured worker. So the pre-authorization that we have here is that, and these are for claims that were previously closed and a person needs to come back now for additional medical treatment that may be required, as identified by the treating practitioner. So we received about 237 of these in the financial year, and about 229 of them, which is 97%, were authorized within the 10 working days. This is 97% against the target of about 85%. So that's the, I think I'll end my presentation here, Chair, because if the rest of the presentation then just shows the same statistics, comparing them quarter on quarter for the rest of the 2018-2019 financial year. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much. Right now we will, I will then hand over to members for questions, clarities. I think we got can I get hands? Honorable Gabane, Honorable Inanna, Honorable Volmana, Hermans, I'm sorry, in that order. You will indicate, I don't want to be prescriptive, you will, but if you are going this way, because we had almost three presentations, so it's fine if you have all the questions for all those presentations at the same time, I will allow you to ask questions in a way that you think that it will be fine for you. Okay.
No, thank you. The first clarification question is on the presentation on supported employment enterprises. Go to slide 103. My question is on slide 103. The DDG indicated that some of the investment is spent on fixing the old machinery in the factory. So it's page 52, but slide 103. Yeah, so what I want to clarify on is that in their budget allocation as this directorate, do you guys have operation and maintenance budget to ensure that when some of these machinery or equipment need some repairs, you do have that besides the one that you get from your investment? Secondly, is that is there any asset management system that you have in place that could perhaps detect that this machinery needs the maintenance at this particular period, or the lifespan is from this period to this particular period? The second question, I'm going to be opportunistic on this one, Chair, because I heard that there's corporate services here in the house. Ah, she's running away. Okay, at least the acting DG is here. She's going to respond. It is on page 9 and page 25. When I engage on this one, I'll talk to both pages, page 9 and page 25. it's page 9 and page 25. It is in relation to the decline.
Sorry, honorable member. She wants to check if page 25 is it
like number 49, I'm making an example. That's what she wants to. If you say page 25.
Page 9, it's slide 18. Page 25 should be. Page 25 here. Yeah, on the intervention. I'm going to talk on both slides. Slide 18 and slide 50. When the acting DG was presenting, she did mention that some of the factors that result in underperformance on the inspection and enforcement services may be attributed to the fact that there is a staff turnover in the department. When I look at the intervention, there is nothing that speaks to that. So what I want to establish is that, is there any corrective action plan that the department has in place to actually mitigate this risk?
Nala, thank you very much, and welcome as well to the presentation that were made. Chairperson, my questions are going to be on page 11. In all the slides, that is slides number 20, 21, 22, and 23. Is about the target setting, the indicators. What might be the reason behind setting four as a planned indicator? Because my understanding is that the number is too low and the possibility, therefore, of achieving the target is easily achievable. Is there any particular reason that we are setting the indicators at just four? Why not six or eight or ten? I am taking this person knowing very well that even in education, the passing mark target is 30%, and that has increased the quality of education that the people are getting from 50. And on the performance, therefore, when we're setting the indicators at four, I will not lower the standards so that we can achieve and therefore claim that we are successful, because it's easy to get the 100% off if we are targeting 4%. The second one, Chairperson, is on page number 22 on the media interviews and inquiries. Is the department looking at the main media as a conveyor belt to communicate anything that they want to do? Because when I'm looking at the interviews that were made with media, I miss a lot of popular, in terms of radio, all the media are being rated, whether it's radios, newspapers, or social media, where the communication is being effectively done. But I don't see the major communication centers, has just been voted as the best radio station in all of South Africa. And it has got a very huge number of the audience. And not only that, there are others. Are you going to look at the most popular media center so that you can convey the message to the people? Chairperson, on page 24, slide, what is the I don't see it. On the sectoral review, there are a number of acts from different sectors where the contravention has been done. And I believe that the intervention was made. For instance, if there is a contravention that is happening, which is something that is in everyone's mind in agriculture, between the relationship of the worker and the employer, what kind of intervention or assistance when that section has been contravened because there are some of the sectors that need to be getting the education, in particular the workers, so that they can know their rights. I would expect the chairperson that on page 36, slide 71, maybe we get to understand, as the workers per province has been listed, that how far by now, I know the target has been made, the target and the actual, how far by now is the issue of the employers been on the table? Are we achieving, because we were confronted with the 29% of the unemployment rate in South Africa. We would therefore want to understand that what each province is contributing in terms of reducing that employment rate. What are the figures at the moment? And the last chairperson question would be on 37. What are the major contributing factors to the unemployment rate? So that when we talk of employment and labor, we know that our target is based on a particular sector, on a particular skills, so that we have the impact on how to approach this huge task of unemployment.
Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. First, let me apologize for arriving late. I've been running up and down looking for G26, passing G26 several times.
Okay.
Yeah. Chairperson, I have only two questions. The first one is with regard to the overall performance of the Northern Cape. What I want to check is that as the department, do we conduct any exit interviews to check possibly what are the major reasons that makes the people to leave the Northern Cape? With the understanding of the distances that have to be traveled, the lack of opportunities, recreational and everything. And do we have maybe anything in the form of incentives to say if you are working in this province, with all the challenges surrounding the province, this is what we are giving to you as the department in order to try and retain those people that are working in the Northern Cape, some form of a retention strategy that we have as a department to keep the people in that province based on the number of challenges that we know, the distances and everything that people are complaining about. And then the second issue is on the SEEs. When you look into the challenges, Chair, one of the challenges is that the market for the products of the SEEs is shrinking. Then when you are asking yourself that as government, there are a number of buildings that we are building. There are a number of institutions that are being refurbished, that are getting new furniture and everything. What is it that we can do to say there is an amount or a percentage that is ring-fenced, to say as government, when you procure, at least this amount must go to the SEEs, because that is part of job creation, that is addressing number of the needs that we are facing as the country, the high rate of unemployment and everything. To say as we are fighting the high rate of unemployment, there is employment that we are creating as government, but what is it that we are doing in order to support that? Is it possible for us, maybe as we are going to lobby with the municipalities, with other departments, also to lobby as to say, in whatever that we are going to procure, this percentage must be ring-fenced and it must go to the SEEs. Thank you.
From my side, if there are any other hands, the just three questions. Just one, in terms of compensation on the devices that you are utilizing, I would have an interest on the quality. Where are you procuring them? Are they of the standard? I'm raising this because people are forever complaining of the quality of wheelchairs that they are getting. But for me, is that the standard of the devices, and where are they procured? Two, on high turnover of inspectors, what is the causal factor? Is it compensation? Is it workload? Is it are they being poached? And do you have a program as the department of going to institutions, I'm making an example, of higher learning or high schools to check if there are any young people, the learners who may have an interest in this field of inspection. On the what is this now? My favorite, the one that deals with people with disability. There is a slide that talks about those that have got chronic disabilities. If you say chronic, which because if you say chronic to me, it's something else. As a former health worker, if you say a chronic person is being, what is it that it's all that has missed that? If I can just be explained that chronic within the context of the Department of Employment and Labour, what do you mean about that? I think those are the few questions from my side. What we will do, that lunch now is here. I would propose that we'll break for lunch, and then we then come and allow, because it's going to be cold. It's going to be cold. And I want to say it here, it's a very difficult situation that we are put under by laws and to be that the amount of lunch that is being served is calculated on the number of members. And we were told the CFO said, we are told that the department is supposed to be taking care of it. It's a new thing. It's a sixth administration. So, but I want them to then say, we'll then allow members, if members feel free, they say, fine, I will sacrifice my lunch for the department, is fine. But I just want to because there was that grey area in the last meeting. We are going to break for lunch, honourable members, just for 30 minutes if we can, and then as they are sorting out who's going to answer and what is going to be their response, we'll then be having lunch. Thank you very much.